Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with Chris Buchanani. Chris, happy Memorial Day to you. I hope you're enjoying the holiday weekend.
The same to you, Jim. And I think now we are about 45 days away from what I always think of the unofficial start of college football season, which is Arts Fest in Happy Valley. So it's getting closer.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. A lot of folks, I've had somebody else tell me they look at 4th of July, which is just a week or so prior,
sure,
as that date when people start thinking about college football.
Sure.
Get the 4th of July behind you, it's time to start thinking about the fall.
From our perspective as hashtag content creators, that's when we can really start credibly getting away with season preview stuff. But yeah, back in the day, in the analog days, I always used to mark the beginning of my ramp up to college football season by going downtown on the Sunday of Arts Fest weekend and buying the Town and Gown football annual. So, you know, I don't know if they're still going to have magazines here in 2024, but spiritually, I will still be buying magazines. Phil Steele, I'll go pick up the Phil Steele magazine. There you go.
His stuff is fantastic. Just lots of data there. All right. Couple topics that I want to get to with you today. Big news week for off season. We had the big NCAA settlement. We had the vote on the Beaver Stadium renovation. We will be getting to both of those, Chris. But before we get there, let's clean up a few things from past shows and things that have come up. Some of our listeners have questions based on your information. See, I'm absolving myself from any of this, and I'm laying it on you.
Yeah, I see how it works here. That's fine. Yes, that's.
Let's start with, we had fun last week with our all-time James Franklin team. And there's a couple things that you and I, we didn't deal with it directly, sort of indirectly, was the question of what qualified as a James Franklin player.
Right.
Was it a player that he recruited and brought in? And quite candidly, and this is how I absolve myself of blame, I started with the first James Franklin recruiting class, and that's how I looked at a James Franklin player. However, we've had listeners, they called us out on some of it. And the one name, and I know I mentioned this to you this week, we talked about it, and you wanted to address. We had one of our listeners say, how could you overlook Anthony Zettel? Chris, how could you?
Yeah, well, I'll basically just eat crow on that one. Like, by the standards I use to include Carl Nassib, Anthony Zettel obviously should have been there. And, you know, this is not an excuse. It's an explanation. We get a ticking clock on these segments, Jim. You know, we get about 11 minutes of actual content when you've got your intro and you're throwing it to the bumper and all of that. And so you're trying to make sure you're hitting all of the points and you don't want to linger too long on any one topic. And the misery of trying to work through who you wanted to select for the defensive line, I thought was already maybe starting to slow down the pace of the show with me going over the whole thing with Austin Johnson. And so I probably just did not do a really good job of parsing through my own thought process, which I think was just trying to split the difference, I guess, because, again, if I'm being honest, and this is the way I'm going to clean it up. If I am looking at the James Franklin era and giving you my all James Franklin era team of who I think belongs on a starting defensive line, I think I'm probably putting Austin Johnson and Anthony Zettel on the interior, and I'm putting Nassib at defensive end. So you're really only getting one James Franklin recruit, and that's Yetur Gross-Matos. Now, if I am going with James Franklin recruits, then that front four looks like Yetur with Robert Windsor and PJ Mustafer, who are guys who I think are really worth, especially PJ, worthy of recognition. And then I put Shaka Toney at the other defensive end spot. But yeah, absolutely. if we're just saying 2014 to present, Settle needs to be on that team.
Okay, I'll go with that. There's nothing wrong with that. And I'll also point out one of my favorite
things. And that stinks, by the way. That is not flattering to our recruiting at the defensive line position, that we're doing like a basically an all-decade team, even though it's not an actual decade. It's a decade of James Franklin. And three of the four best defensive linemen, you can very strongly argue, were holdovers from another regime.
That's an interesting point. And I also want to point out to our listeners who send in this kind of thing, I have no problem with that, Chris. It means they're passionate.
Absolutely.
It means they're smart. And it means they're actually listening to us. They're paying attention. So
we love all three of those things. Yes, by all means.
Yes, we do. All right. A couple of other things to clean up. One of our very good listeners, very good questioners, he sends in great questions, is Tim from Port Matilda. If I have a criticism of Tim from Port Matilda, and he's well aware of this, his questions are very long. He gives me like a full page of the question, and he challenges me to cut it down. So here is a piece of Tim's question from Port Matilda. All right. Sorry I haven't input one of my long questions in a bit. I know you love breaking them down, Jim. I have to say, though, I'm disappointed in you, Jim. Chris Buchanan came on the show and completely crapped all over Penn State's 2024 chances. 9-3? You needed to press him a ton more. That's not good enough for the playoffs. I've been a defender of James Franklin, but if he comes out with 9-3, doesn't make the playoffs. Even Tim from Port Matilda has an issue. He says, did James Franklin reach a level he can't surpass? Think Mark Richt and Georgia. I want you to respond to this, although that was a question sent in for Andy Shea in Ask Andy segment.
Sure. And again, I can't emphasize this strongly enough. I said it when I said it on the show. This is not my official prediction yet, folks. I'm giving you a little peek behind the curtain in terms of where my thinking is at, but until I say it on the first obligatory pregame show of the year, it's not my official prediction. And maybe I will get talked into 10-2 until we get to August. It's going to be very, very hard after how badly I got burned and just what a complete doofus I felt like after buying in on last year's team for me to predict them to win any more than 10 games. I mean, again, talking about the 10 years James has been here, he's never made it through a season without at least two blemishes on the record. And, I do like to point out about how when we pat ourselves on the back for 11 win seasons, we act like they weren't playing 10 or 11 regular season games back in the day. So, yes, impressive, great. I'm not poo-pooing the 11 win seasons. An 11-win season in the 2020s doesn't mean what it did in the 1970s or 80s or 90s. Show me that you can get through a season with one or, of course, fewer losses. But, again, I just look at it and I say I take Ohio State off the board immediately. I give us a 0% chance to beat them every single time. Penn State's never won on the West Coast against USC. And I don't think this is a team. I mean, look, we're expecting the wide receiver group of this team to be a complete abomination. How can you have I don't care how good Drew Aller is, with all the retooling along the offensive line, great tailbacks, fine. But pretend it's Missouri, okay? And they're going to be pretty good this year. You got to show me. And this receiver group showed me nothing last year. And Julian Fleming can't instantaneously transform them from the total mess they were in 2023 to a group that I think can win 11 games in 2024. So pending some earth-shattering event that changes my opinion of one of the key skill position groups on the whole team, I can't buy into them winning these big games like a road game at USC. For all the faults the Trojans will have, that is a really tough road trip to make. And so then now if we're to two losses, I look at all the other opponents on the schedule, and I can easily see another place where Penn State gets tripped up and it doesn't feel like a massive upset. So that's just where I'm at right now. And I mean, is that good enough for fans and for Pat Kraft and for boosters in terms of James Franklin's job security? Like, no, probably not, but I also don't think it's going to be enough to get him fired.
I'm with you on that. But what I find interesting here with Tim from Port Matilda, it's not so much that he has a problem with you predicting 9-3. His problem is with me for not pushing you on it. So,
well, it's a fake prediction, Jimmy. You can only push so much. When I give my official record prediction later in the summer, then you can push on that.
All right. Then we'll get lots of heat. And Tim, another reason to make sure you pay attention to our show, you got to get the official take from Chris. All right. Speaking of our very good listeners and contributors to the show, have to bring up Steve from Columbia. Steve put this question out again for Andy, but also wanted it relayed to you, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And here was Steve's question. Steve wanted to know, how good a fan, how serious a fan are we? How dedicated a fan we would be?
Sure.
And he asked both me and Andy, would we sacrifice our pinky toe for a championship?
Yeah.
Chris, I know you're an avid Penn State fan. Would you sacrifice one of your pinky toes? And by the way, Steve also pointed out, as we get older, it gets more and more difficult to clip that pinky toe nail also. So getting rid of it isn't so much a bug, it's a feature. So Steve from Columbia wants to know, would you sacrifice a pinky toe for a Penn State national championship?
Okay, so here's the thing. The pinky toe is actually very important, right? And, I'm a runner. I like running. That would be totally screwed up with that. But here's the thing, Jim. I thought about this. And one thing I would like clarified is whether or not the fact that my pinky toe sacrifice earned Penn State a national championship is something that could be disclosed to people. So, like, could I, like, dine out on
having sacrificed
my toe? Yeah. I would never have to pay for a drink in State College again, which would be wonderful. But irrespective of that, the answer to the question is yes. Yes, I would sacrifice the toe. And this is why. If I am faced with a situation where I can, in no uncertain terms, deliver that amount of euphoria to that amount of my fellow Penn Staters merely by making a nominal physical personal sacrifice, I think it would be almost selfish of me, Jim, not to do it. So the good news for everybody is, if that magical scenario ever manifests itself, Penn State is going to be standing under the confetti because I will give up the toe.
All right. That's the final note in quarter number one. Stick around. We got lots more to go. Coming up in quarter number two, right after this break.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership, with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. We are talking Penn State football and pinky toes. We wrapped up quarter number one with Chris telling us very admirably he would sacrifice a pinky toe for a Penn State national championship. You know what, Chris? You're making me feel bad because I stated I would not do that. I wouldn't mutilate my body for the benefit of a Penn State football national championship.
Well,
and you know me. You see the physical shape that I'm in. My body's a temple here, Chris. I never, you know, put bad food in, alcohol, any of that stuff. So for me to damage my body for a national championship, that just wouldn't do.
Very selfish of you, Jim, but okay.
All right, let's move on. The big story in the national news this week, Chris, is they settled, I say they, the NCAA, the major collegiate sports conferences, they voted on making a settlement on a lawsuit that has tremendous ramifications for college athletics and especially college football. The essentials of it are that college athletes, right prior to the NIL, beginning in 2016, right up until, I guess, 2021, class action lawsuit by collegiate athletes because they weren't allowed to use a name, image, and likeness. They were not allowed to make money in that way. And there's a problem with that. And I guess I believe the only reason why it went back to 2016 is statute of limitations. They can't go back any further than that. But anyway, there was approximately a $2.8 billion agreement as a settlement where those monies would go to those players prior to NIL from like the year 2016 through 2021, I guess it is. And that $2.8 million would be paid out over the next 10 years. It's not official yet, this settlement. I guess the judge has to stamp the approval. Yeah. I can't imagine that would be a problem, that they went through all of this, all sides agree to it, and then have the judge say no. So we're pretty confident. And the other part to it is that then moving forward, that the schools would be allowed to compensate players approximately $22 million a year. Now, there's a lot more to this, a lot more detail. And I think one of the most confusing things, Chris, and perhaps you could address this, is this $20 million that would be paid to athletes going forward, that doesn't necessarily make them employees. Correct. It's almost as if this is part of like the NIL compensation for the players, right?
Yes. We'll try to touch on the high points here without going so far down into the weeds that people's eyes glaze over. And I understand that's very difficult to do. You're trying to give people some guidance into understanding how the sport is about to change. But the problem is, it's very difficult to do that without descending down into the granular details of the whole thing. Basically, as I understand it, this revenue sharing that's about to happen, and I mean, to pat ourselves on the back here a little bit, I think if you've been listening to our segments together, really over the last couple of years, you had a pretty good understanding that this is where it was going to go on about the timeline that it looks like it's going to follow. This revenue sharing is going to be, as you said, sort of structured as almost like a name, image, and likeness payment, as opposed to a salary, certainly, because they're not employees, or what's currently happening, what are known as Alston payments. That's based on another court case that the NCAA, well, the NCAA is like the Washington Generals of the American legal system. Like, if they get into a courtroom, they're about to have their butt kicked. So those are like the cost of living stipend payments that Penn State scholarship athletes currently receive. This is going to be distinct from that. And I think for me, the upshot is, in a very distinct, important way, they cannot be across the board equal payments, even for all the players on the football team, because that then opens up the door to antitrust allegations against the NCAA. And that's why college sports will now shift out of this court settlement to a full court press on Congress to issue some sort of antitrust exemption for college sports and college football in particular. And so in the short term, if this does end up getting operationalized next year based on this settlement, and that may not happen because there could be all kinds of court challenges that come out of this settlement, even though you have all the big players sitting down at a table and coming to agreement. What you and I have got to bat it back and forth is, you talked about, you know, like $8-9 million split evenly among all the players on the football team. It's not going to look like that. And to me, that's undesirable, because I thought the biggest advantage that could come out of revenue sharing would be to stabilize the sport and just give a nice stable floor for all the players on the roster. And then NIL becomes about rewarding the high performers. And so I really hope, however this thing shakes out, eventually we can get to a point where the revenue sharing is providing some sort of equal compensation for everybody on the roster. But that's not the way it's going to look right now.
No, we can't. And I think that's unfortunate that they can't do it that way, so that they could, as you put it, here's the floor, everybody will get that. And the stars, of course, would have the opportunities through outside NIL, do endorsements, and be the differentiator.
And the schools should still be able to, till we get to this, in the fall of 2025 is probably the earliest they're going to be able to start actually putting it in action. By then, I think most states, pending any kind of federal congressional action, hardy har har, most states will have followed the example of Virginia, and I think Illinois, maybe one or two others, in allowing schools to directly manage their NIL. So you'll be able to have one like so-called centralized front office that is looking at the roster and saying, okay, like here's our depth chart. Everybody is getting their slice of the revenue pie. But, you know, we've got Drew Aller. We've got Nick Singleton. We've got Tyler Warren. These are our star guys. We got to make sure that we are compensating them over and above their revenue sharing number. And that's where NIL would come in. To me, that's about as good a system as we're going to get, unless we see a massive overhaul and shift to employment status. But yeah, this is a step in the right direction, but it does seem like it replaces some old problems with what are going to be some new ones.
I have no doubt there will be, but I think there's also, Chris, this idea that you will pay Nick Singleton more money than the third string punter. There's also a little more repercussions to that, which is, I believe the schools want to say, hey, wait a minute, this is based on your market value. Nick Singleton has a certain market value that is greater than athletes from, say, some of the Olympic sports.
Sure.
This brings up the whole Title IX issue.
Correct.
So if we're allowed to compensate players by their Q value, their NIL value, you don't have to pay then the same amount to the female athletes who obviously don't have the same NIL value. And I shouldn't separate it by the women athletes versus the male athletes. It's more about what sport they're playing.
Yeah, the it's players, men's basketball and football. That's it. They generate revenue. Every other sport is operating in the red. Even like Penn State fans will say, oh, what about hockey or wrestling? Men's hockey flirts with break even at Penn State, and wrestling does the same. But I mean, look, they're not generating revenue. Okay. Football is paying for everything. And then men's basketball is operating in the black to the tune of a few million dollars, but really like that's because of accounting and how we look at the money that we bring in for broadcast rights for those sports. So yeah, but to your point, there is no federal law that has been interpreted to say you got to pay your football players and your hockey players the same amount, or treat your hockey and football players the same. Title IX does say you've got to provide the same opportunities irrespective of gender. Where it sits right now is that all parties have kind of come into agreement, and they're saying that this is not going to be a Title IX issue. And again, I won't get into the complicated rationale for why, but they're saying we'll be able to pay the football players more than everybody else, and Title IX will not be a factor. I mean, okay, great, but the odds that that is not going to be tested in court are almost zero. So that's one of the many hangups. After this thing does get approved by the judge, it's not like smooth sailing afterwards. And the Title IX question for sure is going to be one of the big ones that needs to get settled.
And Chris, I want to use this topic as another excuse to mention my father, who one of the smartest men I ever knew in my life. And he's right now, if you read anything political, you got to determine where the source is. That determines what you hear. year, probably when I was a kid, okay, I'm talking over 50 years ago, whenever I had an article I would show my dad in a magazine, he would always say, did you check who wrote it? What's the perspective? Where's it coming from? And I'm going to give that same warning to our listeners here. When you read these articles on this settlement, they will always quote the experts. Make sure you read the title of the expert. The expert who talked about Title IX and said, yeah, they're going to have to pay, you know, the female athletes just as much. Guess who that expert was? He was a Title IX lawyer, Chris, okay? He makes his living out of suing schools for not adhering to Title IX. And as we went through this, another issue that came up was, are these players going to become employees? And there was an expert who said, yes, this is obviously going to end up with the players becoming employees. Well, who was that expert? He was one of the guys representing an organization that is trying to organize the players so that they could collectively bargain. So it was in his best interest. So please, people, read who it is the quote is coming from. That's the final note for quarter number two, but we're not done talking about this settlement, Chris. We'll pick that up when we come back for quarter number three.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking about the settlement that appears to have been agreed upon this past week from between college sports, the players, NCAA, the power conferences are involved. And Chris, I finished up the last segment, maybe going on a little bit too much, but it always just strikes me whenever you see quotes, and obviously the writers of these articles, they're reaching out to the people that are relevant. They are relevant, but they are not necessarily unbiased in their opinions when you get those expert quotes, are they?
Hardly. And yeah, I am sure people are getting sick and tired of this stuff. They come to shows like ours to share their love of Penn State and to talk about college football. Nobody wants to hear about this legal stuff endlessly. I think for most people, I'm guessing the hope is, can y'all just speed the process up here and get us to the end point, whatever it's going to look like, let's not have one after another metamorphosis year. Just get to the end point, give us the new model, and let us get back to talking about the sport and the young men who play it. Now, unfortunately, the bad news for everybody who feels that way is what's actually going to happen is, as you alluded to last segment, Jim, now a swarm of lawyers from every subset of law is going to descend on this thing, and they're all going to extract a pound of flesh. And so a lot of attorneys are going to make a lot of money. We're going to be in flux for probably several more years as we work our way through this. And as you get disgusted with it, I would remind you to look back in time and see who was in charge of the major power conferences and the NCAA and the most influential institutions in college football during the early parts of the 21st century, because it is all their fault. All the signs that we were headed in this direction were there, plain to be read by anybody who was willing to do so, and they all kicked the can down the road. So I'll just single out Jim Delaney because he's the first name that comes to mind. The Jim Delaneys of the world, this is their fault. And so, yeah, this is just going to continue to metastasize for quite some time, I'm sorry to say.
They could have preempted all of this very easily and ironically at less expense to their organizations. Chris, I want to hit on something else. Now, you were you brought
one
this
thing
up.
You'll notice. Sorry, Jim. One thing you'll notice as you go back and look is they're practically all retired. So clearly their thinking was, I'm going to do this now because by the time this thing comes to a head, it's going to be somebody else's problem to clean up. And unfortunately, they were right.
Well, we'll save that another point I was going to make until we get hit the fourth quarter and another topic. But you were someone who brought this up quite a while ago on our show when we're talking about folks were saying the sky is falling, college football is going to hell in a handbasket. Is the bigger issue wasn't because players are being compensated. It was the transfer portal.
Yeah.
It's this free agency, universal, consistent, constant free agency. That was not directly addressed in this, Chris, but it will have, this can have an effect on transfer portal. Can you explain how?
Well, again, the devil is in the details. I hate to keep coming back to this, but my dearest hope is that as we start to actually figure out the structure of implementing this new world where the money that's coming in through media rights and, you know, all the other sources, but that's the biggie for sure, is shared with the players who are making all of it possible, which I'm in favor of, that now that there is going to be real serious money on the table, that's tied to some sort of obligation on the part of the players. You know, I always hear people use the line, well, the coaches can leave whenever they want. The coaches can get up and leave. And I say, yeah, right. The coaches can leave whenever they want, theoretically. But they have contracts, and those contracts have buyouts, and somebody is responsible for remunerating the institution that's losing a coach via buyout. Now, again, like there's going to be some attorney in the audience who gets into the fact that they're employees and it's not apples to apples. Here's the bottom line. It's bad for the sport long term to have complete unfettered free agency of all the players. So fans can have absolutely no connection with the guys on the team. It's like, to me, the underlying logic is like, if you don't treat these human beings as if in fact they are like inert, interchangeable automatons, then you're a bad person. Well, I don't buy it. There needs to be, in my opinion, Jim, some structure to this that gives some sort of stability to your roster year to year. I'm not saying there should be no mechanism by which a player can move from one place to another if there are really good reasons to do so. But it can't be what we have right now, and it shouldn't be. And there should be extraordinary obligation on the part of the institution, which is offering a scholarship and a roster spot to the player. And there should be some sort of commensurate commitment from the player once they get into that. And the key to all of that, as it is in so many things in life, is dollar signs. And we're getting there. So please, for the love of God, can we stop the transfer portal carousel in the next few seasons?
Yes, I would really hope that that's part of this situation. And it just seems so easy. You're getting compensated. You've got a contract. Those of us out in the real world who've had employee contracts, you know, you're obligated for a certain number of years. There's a penalty for breaking it. You gave the good example with the coaches. That's part of the contract. I'd like to see it.
Here's what I want. I want the seriousness of the commitment to be elevated at the point of entry. So I want the high school recruiting process to carry a lot of weight. I want these guys who have this exceptional talent and are blessed enough to be in a position where all of these great universities and all of the prestigious football programs are competing for their services. I want the decision of where they are going to commit and where they are going to go, where they're going to play their football and spend the next few years of their lives and where they're going to go to college. I want that to carry a lot of weight so that you really think through and you make a decision, understanding that it's a serious one that carries a commitment. And then once you sign on the dotted line, you and the school, you guys are in the foxhole together. And again, when there's big money being paid out, I think then you can have that reasonable kind of commitment.
I agree, Chris, and that's got to be part of it. And it would, don't make it impossible to enter the transfer portal, but don't make it so that every year is complete and total free agency, players going to the highest bidder.
Yeah, there needs to be some pain and sacrifice involved. And maybe there is some kind of a buyout, right? So if I want to have your player transfer to my school, somebody is responsible for paying a financial penalty. It could be the player. It could be the institution. And it's just like with coaches. Again, I'm spitballing here. I understand all this stuff is complicated. What I want to achieve is we get to an end point where college football looks a little bit more like it did when I was a kid, which is that you come to Penn State and then you're a Nittany Lion. And there's a feeling of connection and of shared experience there with the guys on the team and the rest of the student body and the alumni base. And I want that for every school.
Chris, I also wonder if it's a case of maybe it's just mutual agreement. Both sides agree. Both sides have to agree on a contract. Maybe sure. Both sides have to agree to end the contract. I think if, because there are instances, I'll use Christian Vaiu as the example. He was passed by Drew Aller. Christian Vaiu was not ever going to be the starting quarterback at Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that he deserved an opportunity elsewhere. What I don't think it should be, though, is Drew Aller who says, oh, now someone's going to pay more money, let me go. That's the, I believe, to be the difference. And where the transfer portal, I think, is, and probably Penn State would say, you know what? It is the case. Christian Vaiu is not going to be a starter here. I'd rather have that scholarship back and reinvest it maybe in the next quarterback who will in time be the starting quarterback at Penn State. So there's got to be a way to make that work. The other ramification to this that I don't get think to this settlement that I don't think gets talked about very much, Chris, is this doing away. You would have roster limits, not scholarship limits. Now that sounds like a distinction without a difference, but the example would be if the roster limit would be for football would be 85, you couldn't have 20 walk-ons. Where it's another example is baseball, where there's a 32-man roster, but there's only 10 scholarships. What they're saying now is if the roster limit is 32, you could give out 32 scholarships. What that effect, at least on football, might be is the dissolution of the walk-on programs.
Yeah. I think as I have tried to study that provision of it, Jim, maybe it's a little bit of a cop-out, but I find it hard to believe that that's going to end up getting implemented the way it's described in this settlement right now, because you're already seeing like places where you're going to quibble around the edges on the important details, right? I do think scholarship caps are going to go away. So, you know, maybe you're not going to see the wrestling team having to give out, you know, like 0.28% scholarships yes. by the, you know, it's like, okay, you're a wrestler, you're on scholarship. I think that goes away. I think the question of how you cap your roster numbers, that's, we're still probably a step away from that because we're still deciding on who is going to be the governing authority that sets those rules and most importantly enforces them. Because as we've learned with NIL, you can set all the rules you like. If there's no mechanism by which you enforce those rules, you know, Peter Venkman and Ghostbusters, they're really more like guidelines. Okay. So yeah, I'm, I think we're moving in the right direction on scholarship numbers. We're not there yet.
All right. Like a lot of things, Chris, they've got to work out the details of it, and that's where the devil is. That is it for quarter number three. Quarter four, I'm going to ask Chris about the stadium renovation. Stay tuned for that.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. This is quarter number four of our show. We've been talking about the settlement, NCAA, college athletics, the ramifications, which are going to be quite a few. I mentioned, I teased that we would be talking about the stadium renovations, but before we get there, let's just wrap up that settlement, Chris.
Yeah, just two observations. The first of which, it cracks me up, Jim, the way the power conferences sat down at the table with the plaintiffs in these class action suits and hammered out this agreement that, oh, you know, we're going to pay $2.8 billion and the NCAA will pay this amount and the power conferences will pay this amount and all the other conferences will pay this amount. And, you know, now you're seeing the commissioners of these conferences say, like, no, wait 1 minute here, guy, what's going on? And so we've been hearing all this talk about, like, oh, the NCAA is on its last legs and the power conferences are going to break away and they're going to want nothing to do with all these, like, Missouri Valley, Big Sky conference type groups. And they're all going to go and live in their separate worlds until suddenly they get in the courtroom. And there's an idea that they all have a shared legal obligation to pay billions of dollars in damages. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's back in the same boat. Jim, it's the Big Sky Conference. No, you are brethren. We're all college sports programs. We're in this together. By the way, you owe us $300 million over the next 10 years. So yeah, that's cracked me up a little bit. And then the other thing is that I think could get unbelievably messy, and I'm glad I don't have to have any involvement with this process, is the payout of the damages. I don't know if you noticed this in some of the articles. It said that if you're somebody who played from 2016 up until, I guess, like whenever NIL got instituted, you're going to get some money from this case, from this payout. You're part of the class. Well, that's not going to be distributed equally either. And they're going to have to come up with a formula that approximates what your market value would have been when you played. And it's going to be based on, you know, maybe snap count. And another thing I saw thrown out was star rating in the recruiting process. Now, we're all well acquainted at Penn State with guys who come in with high star ratings whose performance doesn't match the hype. I don't want to be anywhere near the conversations of the two-star guy who, you know, balled his brains out for his entire collegiate career, and he gets a smaller check than the five-star dud because some dope at a recruiting service was convinced that he was the second coming of Christ. You know, so again, there are going to be all kinds of tentacles that spread outward from this settlement once it gets finalized.
Well, also, though, Chris, I think in that it's not going to be strictly that star rating. I saw where they would even talk about snap count. How often were you on the field? How much did you play? What was your value in that way? And I think this is one of those, it's not going to be you get paid or not get paid.
Yeah.
It's going to be, you know, shades of gray.
I mean, the whole thing is stupid. I'm sure it will be somewhat unfair. If you're a recipient of one of these checks, you can look at it and you can tell yourself, you know, number one, it's free money. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Second of all, At least you're getting something. Think about all the poor suckers who played college football all the years before 2016. You know, they just get the satisfaction of a job well done and CTE.
And if you want to do a little bit of math, here you go. The settlement is $2.8 billion going to 14,500 athletes. I think the number comes out to a, if you just do the average number, I think it comes out to a pretty generous figure. I think it is on average like six figures, Chris. So
yeah, they'll be okay.
Yeah, you'd probably just be happy that you got something. All right, let's move on. The other big news, more local, is for Penn State fans. The news that the Board of Trustees did vote to approve a $700 million renovation. If you want to know more about those details, just check in our, go to our website, KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. Look up that we did an interview with Board of Trustee member Barry Fenchek, who was very concerned about the dollars and cents and what that does to Penn State and the whole process. Let's get away from that, Chris. Let's just talk. You're a Penn State fan. You attend Penn State football games. Are you excited about this renovation? You're in State College. Is the fan base excited about the renovation? What's the feel?
You know, we talked about this a little bit offline this week, Jim. I was here. I was a student when they did the last major expansion to Beaver Stadium. And I know there were some people who, you know, not unjustifiably felt kind of sad that they were taking away the view of Mount Nittany from Beaver Stadium when they added the second level in the south end zone. But, you know, and that was a big deal. It was not just that they did that major expansion of the seating to increase the capacity, but that's when they added the luxury boxes. I don't know. Excitement's probably not the word, right? Because for most people, this is not going to appreciably change their Beaver Stadium experience any more than the last big expansion did. So I think, you know, most people think, whatever, it's cool. It's cool to see improvements and upgrades coming to the facilities. I don't know that people really have a strong opinion one way or the other. And I think maybe that's where I'm at, too. If you ask me, am I excited for it? The answer is no. I mean, there's a small part of me that thinks till all is said and done, maybe I'm going to get kicked out of my seats. But so far, so good on that. I know for sure I'm going to be paying more to the Nittany Lion Club, so I'm not excited about that either. But I understand how the game is played, and, you know, great. We're going to have some cool new things at Beaver Stadium. I'm sure my wife will be happy that the bathrooms are supposedly not going to be as terrible for the ladies. So that's great. Beyond that, fix the Wi-Fi and I'm good.
Well, I think that's probably the biggest concern I've heard from fans is the price tag, you know, for my seats. Am I going to be in the same seats but have to pay so much more, you know, to pay for this upgrade? One of the issues now, you and I have both talked to folks that are involved in the decision-making process, and some of this felt preordained. We're not moving out of Beaver Stadium. We're renovating it. That's it. End of discussion. And, oh, by the way, we'll now do a study that will come to that same conclusion.
Correct.
I'm going to ask the question this way. Is Beaver Stadium just so iconic that – you can't build a new stadium?
There's an element of that. I know there are people who feel that much more strongly than I do. I think we've talked about it before, maybe about a year ago, where I said, if they tore Beaver Stadium down and built a new stadium, which for the record, I'm not really convinced was the right thing to do, but if they did it, I wouldn't be heartbroken. I think I would be a little bit sad. I understand the history of Penn State's football field / stadium has seen the facility move and change multiple times over the history of the program. So it's not like when our guys are running out of the tunnel, you know, they're on the same exact same turf that Mother Dunn was playing on. Right. So I would be a little melancholy, I suppose. But for me personally, it wouldn't have devastated me. But I you know, it's a moot point. We're not going to get a new stadium, and I'm glad Beaver Stadium is staying, and it's going to have a new welcome center. Great. I'm not going to get myself a loge box or however that's pronounced. So again, like, is this affecting my life? It's making me pay a little bit more to the Nittany Lion Club every year, or maybe a lot more till all is said and done. But
yeah, that's the part of this that I'm not sure we'll be able to escape, that everyone's going to have to be paying more dollars to it. I just, my concern, and I know some people don't like to hear this, and I've gone down this path, is the process that it was, we were told the new stadium would be $2 billion. And I'm not exactly sure where that $2 billion number came from. And using examples of some other stadiums that have been built in the fairly recent past, that number seems to be, wait a minute, yes, can you spend that much on a new stadium? Oh yeah, we've found that out with some professional stadiums. You can. That doesn't mean you must. My question, though, is in staying at Beaver Stadium and enhancing part of the stadium and not all of it, are we going to face this same thing in 5, 8, 10 years where someone will then say, well, you know, parts of Beaver Stadium are over 70 years old. We need more work done, Chris.
Yeah, probably. Right. There is always going to be a faction, you know, inside the program and out, who will be there to tell you that the only reason we lost to Ohio State last year was because, like, we only had a 4.5 instead of a 5-star cornerback. And that's because the real talent doesn't want to play in a dump like Beaver Stadium, where, you know, the southeast corner of the stadium hasn't been touched in 65 years. So, yeah, I'm sure those conversations are going to go on. I don't think we're going to see another major, like, substantial capital investment into the facility like this for a long time.
Well, I don't think they'd be able to afford it. But the other point to it, I think
we're not even sure they can afford this one.
That's true. That is true. That is an element of the conversation. But what I also think of is, as compared to some other iconic facilities, and I'm going to go to baseball stadiums because that's where the iconic ones, things like Fenway Park, you know, Wrigley Field, the structure itself is so iconic. At Beaver Stadium, I don't think it's so much the structure is iconic. I think it's the fan base that made a whiteout is made by the fan base,
yeah,
not by the structure.
Sure. Yeah, and look, if you're newer to Penn State football fandom, you're used to Happy Valley and Beaver Stadium being feted as like one of the loudest, most intimidating environments, one of the places you have to have on your college football bucket list. As recently as the 90s, that was not the case. In fact, I know when I was in school, I mostly complained about the fact that I didn't think the crowd got into it enough. So yeah, you could transplant the Penn State fan base into any venue at this point, and they'll be loud and raucous.
That's exactly right. Remember, it's you, the fans, that make it special. All right, Chris, that is it for our show. Happy Memorial Day to everyone out there. I hope you're enjoying the weekend, and I hope you don't forget the reason why we're celebrating it. That's it for today's show. Thank you all for joining us. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.